This episode is brought to you by The Athlete's Foot. Welcome to The Wrap, a weekly podcast covering women's sports news. Bez, what have we got around the grounds this week? Oh, we're in trouble here. Bailey, producer Bailey has put the NBA finals on in the background and Bez is already distracted.
I can do two things at once. I'm a woman. The Hockey Roos secure a series win over India, a new soccer league set to form in the US. And could we see cricket included in the 2028 LA Olympics? That sentence in itself is strange, isn't it?
It's weird. I still don't know how I feel about it.
Money talks.
You are correct. For the key story, we'll discuss the financially troubled Collingwood Magpies Super Netball team, and Bez is ready to rage.
Only because I'm troubled by Collingwood's performance yesterday. I was at the MCG with 80,000 of my closest friends, and it was a tough day being a Carlton fan.
My name is Chloe Dalton, and I'm joined every week on the show by my co-host, Bez.
Welcome home, friend.
Thank you.
How was Bali?
It was so good. We've had a few holidays where we've had a not good run with weather. Like, you know, when you try and go somewhere beachy and tropical and then you get cyclone warnings, this was not that. So that was really nice. It was just a really lovely holiday to kind of switch off and have a bit of time away from all the jobs.
One of your last kind of beachy holidays was unintended because you had a broken face as well. That's not a fun holiday.
It was not a fun holiday. Broke my face 4 weeks out from the Tokyo Olympics.
Not a fun holiday.
Ended up on Hamilton Island. That was quite nice.
Silver linings.
Couldn't see it though with my eyes being so swollen.
Pirated your way around Hamilton Island. Lucky you're on an island.
Lucky.
Did you wear a patch?
No, I did not. Let's take a look around the grounds. In hockey, the Hockey Roos in India have played out a 1-1 draw in the final match of the 3-test series in Adelaide on Sunday, but that was enough to secure the series after two earlier wins. A largely inexperienced Hockey Roos team featuring 5 debutants scored an impressive 4-2 win in the opening match last Thursday and backed that up with a come-from-behind 3-2 victory on Saturday. We love a come-from-behind win. Hockey Jane Claxton said after wrapping up the series, "Our aim was to build throughout the series and learning the way of play. We had a lot of new girls coming in, and it was the first time we had played together as a team, so it was good to build across the 3 matches. What this series has shown is that we have backups in every position and players who can all play attacking style of hockey, so it's going to be a really exciting next couple of years for the Hockey Roos." That sounds overall quite positive, doesn't it?
Yeah, and very exciting because I reckon the Hockey Roos, for me, I'm a bit of a once every 4 years hockey fan, not going to lie.
I think a lot of people are.
Yeah, but they're always like Hockey Roos on the when the Olympics kind of calendar comes out, I'm watching them every time.
Absolutely. It's a great game to watch.
So we need some gold again, please, ladies. In football, some interesting news out of the US last week in the footballing world. The USL, which is the United Soccer League, has announced that they intend to apply for a US soccer Division 1 sanctioning by September the 1st, 2023. The USL Super League is one of 2 women's soccer leagues under the USL's umbrella, which also includes several lower tier men's leagues. They did expect it to apply for a Division 2 status and serve as like a semi-pro league, like its male equivalent, the USL Championship. But instead, they've opted for full professional status, which is quite interesting given the NWSL is now quite set in the States. Mm-hmm. The new league is set to kick off in August 2024 and it states that the league helps address the opportunity gap between men's and women's professional soccer in the United States, home of the world's most successful women's national team. There are currently 101 professional men's soccer teams and 12 professional women's soccer teams in the United States.
I had no idea there are 101 men's professional teams.
I'm not sure. When we think of probably men's professional football, I'm sure it's, I'm assuming it's not as kind of lucrative as European football in the States, but still 101 professional teams with male athletes getting professional coaching and being full-time athletes.
Yeah, that was my question. When we say professional, does that mean they're full-time?
I believe so.
Wow.
Let's go with yes. The league will run in a different window to the NWSL and aims to provide a differentiated experience that includes playing on the international calendar and operating a connected women's pathway from youth to professional. The fall to summer calendar, which is unique in American soccer, aligns the USL Super League with the global game and prioritizes player welfare and performance. The competition will have 10 to 12 teams in its inaugural 2024 season, and the USL Super League president, Amanda Vandervoort, said, "Our aim is to significantly expand opportunities in women's soccer through strategic growth, build a pathway that connects talent with opportunity, and engage communities by celebrating a universal passion for the game expressed through local culture. The USL Super League aspires to be a global leader in women's football, and we look forward to working together with all stakeholders to help shape the future of the game for women and girls in our country, across the region, and around the world."
When I was reading this story, I did want to say that her name does look a lot like She Who Must Not Be Named.
I was waiting for it.
Did you know that was coming?
Absolutely. So don't She Who Must Not Be Named.
Is confident that the soccer landscape is strong enough in the US to support two Division I competitions, pointing out the United States has 12 professional women's teams but is about the same footprint and population as all of Europe, and they have over 150 top-tier professional women's teams. I actually find these comparisons really helpful, because it's kind of sometimes when you think about the fact that there's already 12 professional teams, a really successful competition, but when you put it in that perspective, it makes sense to have more opportunities available.
The US population is 400 and something million people, so we'll just go with that. I'm not going to give you an exact number.
She also confirmed that the USL would be competitive on player salaries, not just domestically, but also in the international marketplace. Vandervoort is acutely aware that a good broadcast deal is key to helping gain more financial stability. And based on discussion so far, she believes there's an appetite for more women's sport. She told The Athletic, "In our industry, we talk a lot about this rising movement of the commercialization of women's sports and interest. But, you know, I can tell you that on the inside, having those conversations, it's absolutely true. I think then when we're seeing it from a commercial standpoint, from a fan standpoint, fan engagement is off the charts. Decades of work have gone into where we are today, and amazing people have been investing their lives in this journey along the way. I'm excited that we now have these ownership groups that are prepared to invest at the levels that they're ready to invest. From building and upgrading incredible stadiums across this country to really investing in the experience for both their players and fans, I think it's an incredible moment in women's soccer." Bez, last week on the podcast, we chatted about the WNBA and how savage some of the cuts were leading into the season, and the fact that there's not enough spots available.
Emily Maley.
I know, devastating.
So sad.
One of Australia's best players.
And looking at the socials for the Chicago Sky, a lot of people really upset. Her and a Virginia Tech rookie also, I think she was drafted number 6 or something, cut.
Yeah, some of the really high draft picks didn't even make the team. So I think when we compare it, I think this is a great example of providing elite professional pathways for the players who just miss out on that. Like if the WNBA had something at a similar level to this, it would be hugely beneficial to those players.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think the fact that this competition is actually going to run in a different window to the NWSL, whilst it is competition because it's the same sport and obviously they're probably looking at a lot of the same fans, they're going to choose different cities to base the teams in. It is going to run in a different window. So theoretically, if you're an American who doesn't necessarily want to go overseas, you could play year-round at home.
Do you reckon players will go across two different teams?
Yeah, potentially. Depending on how long your contract runs for.
Mm.
But I imagine those contracts I imagine a lot of those contracts do only run for the length of the season and preseason, because a lot of them do go and play in Europe.
Yeah, right.
In some more football, this is me kind of being indulgent, but a quick WSL update. Manchester United scored a last gasp winner to beat Manchester City 2-1 on Monday morning and ensure that the title would be decided on the final weekend. Earlier, mighty Sam Kerr's Chelsea had cemented their spot on top of the ladder with a clinical 2-0 win over Caitlin Ford and Steph Catley's Arsenal. Kerr played provider to her skipper Eriksen for the second goal and, most importantly, played out the full 90 minutes, so looks to be over that slightly worrying niggle that she had last week.
Yeah, we love that.
Phew. Chelsea sit 2 points ahead of United with a game remaining and will win the title with a win at bottom side Reading on Sunday. Go Chelsea.
In motorsport, Molly Taylor is back on the Extreme E Series this season and has linked up with Kevin Hansen at Veloci Racing. And she's also doing what she does best. Winning.
Give us a little reminder about Extreme E, Chloe.
So Extreme E, I love Extreme E because it's very environmentally sustainable. That's the whole point of it. So it's an off-road racing series showcasing electric SUVs and futuristic technologies. It's so funny. Sometimes I just picture Teslas racing around the desert. It's not Teslas. Some of the world's most remote and extreme environments. It involves 10 teams consisting of one male and one female driver racing across 10 races in 5 incredible locations, highlighting the effects of climate change and how Extreme E works with change makers to be part of the solution. So I was watching some randomly in Bali. It was on my TV the other day. It was great. I was watching Molly race around the track.
Amazing.
When they talked about having two drivers, I thought they would both be in the car at the same time and then rotate. They do one and then they do like the slow drive in for the transition and then off they go again.
Yeah, tag team in and out.
Yeah, quite cool. Last week, Taylor took out her second Extreme E victory of the season after surviving a wet and slippery Hydro X Prix. The pair led from start to finish to qualify for the grand final, where the heavy rain began to fall for the first time in Extreme E history.
Yeah, they'd never raced in the rain before.
Was that anything to do with climate change?
That's probably a really good point, friend.
The victory means that Taylor and Hansen sit firmly atop the championship standings, 11 points clear of their closest competitors. Taylor will look to make it back-to-back wins at the next round of the championship at the Island X Prix in Italy on the 8th to 9th of July.
In cricket, so following on from last week's chat about netball's intense desire to be included in the 2032 Brisbane Olympics, there were some pretty interesting reports out of LA last week that cricket might find itself an unexpected inclusion in the 2028 Los Angeles Olympic Games.
Strange.
So strange. So great, though.
I mean, we'd love it.
100%. More gold. More better.
Way more better.
The IOC and LA 28, the 2028 host committee, are in the middle of a multi-year selection process to determine which new sports, if any, should be added to the next Olympic cycle. Sports such as lacrosse, which was created in North America. How do we feel about lacrosse?
It's hard because I imagine there'd be a lot of North Americans who would argue that cricket is not a global sport, but I don't perceive lacrosse to be a global sport.
Yeah, I don't understand it. It's like running with tennis rackets.
They're pretty talented.
Yeah.
Some of the highlights reels I've seen, they're pretty impressive.
Still don't understand it. US flag football, which has the backing of NFL. So that's effectively Oztag, but
I
NFL.
I don't think you can have Oztag in the Olympics. Sorry.
And obviously baseball and softball, which is... Poor baseball and softball. They're like in and out and in and out. Like
a toxic relationship.
Is that because they have it with each other? Do you reckon baseball and softball get the ump about being kind of lobbed into the same, like they're different games, different size balls? I don't know. It's weird. Anyway,
I got caught up on you saying get the ump and I was thinking of the umpire.
Yeah, it's a weird saying. I'm sorry. I was channeling Mandy there. Shout out to my mum. Anyway, the International Cricket Council, the ICC, recently put together a financial estimate for how the sport's global popularity might translate to actual dollars, and those numbers are very compelling. The ICC calculated that the proposed men's and women's cricket matches would increase the value of the Olympic media rights in India by more than US $200 million next cycle.
It's quite a lot of money.
That is all according to a document recently viewed by Sportico. The inclusion of a sport that the US would not be expected to meddle in would be a surprise, but the financial argument is obviously very strong. And just to, in comparison, the value of the IOC's media rights in other parts of the world, particularly in India, which is a populous country, obviously, second most, them and China are fighting for gold in that. And it's a country the IOC has not yet fully monetized. The rights are expected to increase over 2,000% if and when cricket is added to the games.
So it's big numbers.
The current deal in India is worth a reported US $12 million for the 4-year cycle that holds the 2024 Summer Games in Paris. So you're talking going from US $12 million to US $200 million, and that's conservative estimates.
Wow.
That is a big uptick. Obviously, they'd be adding the T20 format to the games, and it would be, I think they said, 6 teams. Again, there's that cap that they're worried about of 10,500 athletes. So these are all things that they would have to consider. The ultimate decision does rest primarily with the LA 28 committee, but the ICC believes the global economics argument could resonate there, as well as there are reports that the ICC has pitched the possibility of a separate agreement under which LA 28 could share in the economics of additional international IOC media rights gained from cricket's involvement. So ICC kind of saying, well, we'll do a direct deal with LA28, not just the IOC. Madness. It just, again, shows that there's such a huge market in India in the sporting landscape and just especially when cricket's involved.
While you were talking, I was remembering a discussion a few weeks ago on Sports Sunday about cricket in the US and why it hasn't worked in the past. So I think there's been a pro cricket tournament that launched in 2004 that didn't really work. There's been all-stars games on baseball fields, but there's talk of this Major League Cricket, similar to like Major League Soccer, Major League Rugby that's launched over there that they're going to try. I think it's starting in July of this year. So I think there's attempts in the US to try and build the game over there, which they have struggled in the past. But I wonder whether over the next couple of years, if that competition is successful, whether that might change the minds of some of those North Americans.
Lacrosses.
Lacrosses, as they call them.
Lacrossees.
In rugby league, the Rugby League World Cup in 2025 is in doubt after France pulled out of hosting the tournament. France had been preparing to be sole hosts of the event for the first time since they held it in 1972, but have pulled out after funding cuts from the French government. The French government had demanded a guarantee that the tournament would not suffer a financial loss, and when the organising committee were unable to meet the conditions set to secure the economic viability of the event, the decision was made to withdraw from hosting the tournament. The tournament was expected to be the biggest in history, played across 40 venues, with men's, women's, wheelchair and youth events running alongside one another. But that has all been thrown into doubt and has left the International Rugby League Board scrambling to find a replacement host. The IRL board had an emergency meeting last week, and the body's chair, Troy Grant, revealed four nations have already expressed an interest in taking over from France, including Qatar, New Zealand, South Africa and Fiji. Grant stressed that no option is off the table, including the prospect of delaying to 2026 or even cancelling altogether and planning for the 2029 tournament. I don't think that's either of those are the best option. If four countries have put their hand up.
The rugby league giant of Qatar.
It's a weird decision.
Yes, no, I agree. It has to go ahead, surely.
Surely. I feel like there's been, we've had our fair share of sports not going ahead. You've just got to keep rolling with the momentum of it. Grant noted that the scope of the tournament does pose issues for host nations and said, we'll be guiding each expression of interest to our committee and all those and any options will be presented and proper due diligence will be done. But the reality is the size of the tournament will have a bearing on what we do. The Qatar bid, as you said, Bess, is a bit of an interesting one given the game isn't actually played there. Well, I'm sure there's a few different local teams. I don't know.
Yeah, a few expats playing some rugby league for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But the interest follows the hosting of the FIFA Football World Cup last year that attracted a decent amount of debate in the human rights space, as we know. The temperatures in Qatar in October and November would be a major concern for the sport that's played generally in winter around the world.
You can't play rugby league in 40 degrees.
No, it's not okay for the big props, is it?
No. And we very much hope that the hunt for a new host does not result in the event being streamlined to just include the Men's World Cup, which I think is probably a bit of a fear.
Has that been a genuine discussion, do you think?
I've just seen some back and forth conversations around it. Grant admitted that if the World Cup is still held in 2025, that multi-tournament format will be difficult to replicate given the tight timescales involved in effectively repackaging and rebuilding an event in a different country within a little over 2 years. He said the uniqueness of three World Cups being run at the same time was something that drew record investment. So it's kind of admitting there that because we did have the wheelchair, the women and the men all running alongside each other, we got record investment from that last one in London, in England, sorry, it wasn't in London, Northern England.
Yeah.
He went on to say, we're the only sport that's conducted our World Cup format like that and it stood us aside from other sports. It's a massive selling point. So to abandon that strategy would be disappointing. But we have to be practical in any decisions we make going forward. He's setting us up for disappointment. I can feel it.
They can't possibly just go ahead with the men's.
I just don't see, besides New Zealand, it's interesting, I haven't heard anything from Australian Rugby League yet, but South Africa, Fiji, Qatar, for them to run a tournament of that size I think would be very challenging.
Mm-hmm. But what I find interesting about the French one is, are they not going to have all of the infrastructure, at least a large portion of the infrastructure from the Olympics set up?
You would think so, yes.
Like it seems like quite a natural progression from the Olympics into the Rugby League World Cup.
I think there was, well, and they were also hosting the Rugby Union World Cup at the end of November this year.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. It doesn't really...
Am I allowed to say it's because Rugby Union's more better? Or...
You are. You often hold your tongue, so I'll let you have that one.
No, look, I think reading more about this, they struggled to find investors too, and I think that probably is part of maybe Rugby Union is taking a lot of that money this year. And then obviously you got the Olympics 2025. It would be the third thing in a row. So, yeah, very interesting from the French Rugby League. In more Rugby League news and some more better Rugby League news, the State of Origin squads were both announced last week for the upcoming two-game series. The New South Wales Blues have six new faces in their squad, including Newcastle's premiership-winning halfback Jessie Southwell, who is in line to make her State of Origin debut. The Sky Blues squad features 11 players who went away with the Gillaroos squad for the Victorious World Cup campaign last November. The Queensland Maroons will have some young blood also making their debut at CommBank Stadium on the 1st of June. Broncos captain Ali Brigginshaw will lead the new look Maroon squad, which includes six Gillaroo stars. Very exciting. Two-game series, 1st of June, CommBank Stadium, Thursday night. Get there.
Can't wait for that one. This episode is brought to you by The Athlete's Foot, proudly supporting women in sport since 1976. Start every game on the right foot with the right fit. Get fitted in store today or online at theathletesfoot.com for netball, football, running, and recovery. Now that's fit. In No One Watches Women's Sport News, I like this title a lot, research from the Women's Sports Trust, the Women's Sport Trust, has revealed that the first 4 months of 2023 brought record TV viewership for women's sport in the UK. The study showed this first stat, I'm going to say, it kind of annoys me.
Why?
Because I'll tell you the stat. Because, like, someone could just be flicking channels and accidentally watch 3 minutes. So the stat is that 20.6 million people watched 3 minutes or more of women's sport coverage from 1st of January to 30th of April 2023 in comparison to 18.9 million in 2022.
I think part of that is, and there was another article that I read recently that spoke to how I think the generation 18 to 24-year-olds prefer to watch highlight packages than whole matches.
Okay.
So I think this kind of speaks to that whole younger generation.
The fluid fans.
Fluid fans. I don't have time for a whole game. Give
that
me 3 minutes.
That makes sense, because I do love like your KO minis and all of those kind of things if you miss a game, right?
How good is it?
Yeah, okay. All right, fine. I'll give them that stat.
She's just winding back at Ranga people.
Okay, continuing on to the other ones that I thought were quite
no
good.
No offense, I'm not kicking the boot into anyone here in particular, although I just have, but like 3 minutes of highlights for a football match, an English football match, you're going to see all the goals and all the attempted
She's
goals,
really
aren't you?
She's getting her hate out on football and rugby league today, isn't she?
I don't hate either of them. I'm just being real. 3 minutes of a soccer match, it's probably covering it.
It works out quite well.
Yeah.
The women's Six Nation was the most viewed on record with 10.4 million viewing hours compared to the previous best of 7.7 million last year. Do you see why when it said 3 minutes versus 10.4 million viewing hours, like it's a different story? You know what I mean? 42% of fans for the women's Six Nation were female compared to 37% in 2022.
Nice, girls. Keep supporting women's sport.
We love that, because nothing makes me more angry than seeing the comment sections of a lot of posts about women's sport, these men coming along and saying, it's women's fault. They don't watch any sport, which is simply not true.
It's simply not true. There was an awesome quote from, I'm going to get it wrong, an American soccer player who said, look, I don't necessarily love watching fencing, but I don't tweet about it.
Nice.
So good.
I like that. Average match audiences for the WSL are up 36% season on season, and the 2023 International Cricket Council, the ICC, T20 World Cup racked up a record-breaking 7.11 million live TV viewing hours, eclipsing the previous best of 5.77 million for the 2018 edition. Tammy Parler, Women's Sport Trust Chief Executive, said the unstoppable rise of women's sport is again illustrated by these record-breaking figures. It is hugely encouraging to see that a number of sports, including football, rugby union and cricket are attracting record audiences in the first 4 months of 2023. Sorry, I'm laughing because producer Bailey's over there snoring. I forgot to give a shout out to him. He ran his first half marathon in that, what was it called? The Hoka Runaway Sydney Half Marathon. So shout out to producer Bailey.
And he's a bit pooped.
Well, I'll excuse the snoring on today's episode.
It was a cute quiet snore.
It was a quiet snore.
He's a bit pooped because he ran 21.1 kilometres for the first time ever.
Yeah, impressive.
Legend. I usually drive that far. Rugby union. The Wallaroos opened their international season with a win and at the same time sent skipper Shannon Parry out a champ. The Wallaroos defeated Fijiana 22-5, scoring four tries and holding the ever dangerous Fijiana to just one. I think that was probably the most impressive thing for me, that Fijiana looked dangerous every time they touch a footy. They just, some of the offloads, you just think, oh, she's going to drop that. Oh, that's not going to get to it. And it just happens. Mm-hmm. So amazing. And they actually had a fair bit of the footy in that second half and powerful running, incredible offload game. But yeah, awesome work from the Wallaroos. They just kept getting up and making tackles. Blindside flanker Ashley Masters was easily best on ground, having a hand in all four tries, carrying the ball and bending the line and getting turnovers at crucial times. Maya Stewart scored two tries from the wing, showing why she is the best finisher in the game with her pace and power. My humble opinion. Earlier in the week, Shannon Parry had announced that the 24th test match would be her last, and she was cheered from the field at full time by emotional teammates. Even Shannon shed a tear.
It doesn't happen often, Shannon shedding a tear.
Hardly surprising given what she's given to the game, when you consider what she's given to the game. Four World Cups for the Wallaroos. It's funny, you know, I obviously met Shannon first time playing 15s, and she obviously spent so long in the sevens program. When I was reading that, I was like, I was surprised she'd been to four 15s World Cups.
And we've had this discussion before, the fact that it was her 24th test match, like obviously her sevens career took up a large chunk of that, but the fact that she went to four World Cups and has only played 24 test matches quite
She wasn't missing many Wallaroos test matches.
No, she wasn't, yeah. Because they just weren't available.
No. And obviously was in the Aussie sevens squad that included that game-changing 2016 Olympic gold medal in Rio. At full-time, Parry said, plenty of emotions. It's been a long ride for the last 13 years. The squad's in really good shape and looking forward to being a spectator. I'm looking forward to being a spectator now on the sidelines. For me, the timing was right and the body's not where it was 10 years ago. I'm really happy with the decision I've made. I've loved every minute out there. I wasn't sure I was going to last 80, but just managed to pull through. It's all about the team moving forward. Now they've started off their 2023 campaign on a positive note.
I like that you said it's been a long ride for the last 13 years and that the body's different to 10 years. She only had 3 good years with her body, it sounds like.
Small window. It was announced last week that New South Wales Waratahs skipper Piper Duck would take the reins as Wallaroos captain after Parry's retirement. Duck, at 22, will become the youngest player to captain the Wallaroos when she returns from a foot injury against the New Zealand Black Ferns on June 29th in Redcliffe.
Will you go up for that one?
I've already bought tickets because I was away this weekend and copped some grief. So
I'm not surprised.
Look, Carlton Collingwood, I've got to keep Kirsty happy, and that was booked a long time ago.
We're about to get into that story. Let's take a look at the key story. In netball, there's been plenty going on off the court in netball recently. The Collingwood Magpies players and staff were told last week that the AFL club's troubled super netball program could be finished after this season. Magpies CEO Craig Kelly called a meeting and advised the group that their future is in doubt due to financial issues. Collingwood sit at the bottom of the table, having only won 2 games this season and are experiencing dwindling crowds. They are the least successful of the 3 expansion sides affiliated with football teams that joined the competition in 2017, having made the finals in 3 out of 6 seasons, but having been knocked out each time in the elimination final. The team has attracted some of the biggest stars in netball, but failed to turn that into success on the court. Players and fans were quick to ask how the organisation got to the stage of asking the struggling Netball Australia for financial assistance. Netball Australia is expected to announce a $300,000 profit this year, but it still owes $4 million in loans that have been extended to 2025. In stark contrast, the Collingwood Football Club and brand is one of the largest organisations in Australian sport. Last November, the club announced its 2022 financial results with a net profit of over $7 million. And given it is estimated to cost roughly $3 million to run a super netball club per season, it seems a bit rich that they are asking Netball Australia for support. Bez, you had some thoughts on that one.
Yeah, I might hold them for now. Okay. Keep going.
Collingwood is believed to place the super netball team at the bottom of their list of priorities after the AFL and VFL teams. Madison Brown told Fox Sports that she wasn't surprised by the news. The former Magpie and Diamond said, "As someone who's been in the inner sanctum at Collingwood, I'm not surprised they found themselves in this position. I don't think the foundations at this team's inception were set up to keep this club alive internally either. It's like someone at Collingwood thought, we are a huge sporting organisation. We aren't going to struggle with this. But netball is a different market. You can't treat it the same as football."
Yeah, I think for me that, you know, Madison Brown's really summed it up there. It's not the same market. It's not the same sport. But the reality is that Collingwood Football Club is a brand. You know, 80,000 people at the MCG yesterday. Granted, it was a Carlton home game, so they won't be getting all that money. But it would, if it was a Collingwood home game, same kind of deal. $7 million in profit. This is a not-for-profit organisation. How are you reinvesting that money? And I just think that Collingwood is, you know, one of the largest names in Australian sport. There's no doubt about that. There's an opportunity here for them, a 130-year-old club, to say, actually, you know what? We're going to pilot something here. We're actually going to dig in. We're going to have a real crack at this. We are going to make our Collingwood Netball Club the best club in the country. Instead of after 6 years going, well, you know what? It's too hard. It's not happening.
I also don't think making finals 3 out of 6 times is a horrible track record.
Absolutely not. And they've had some and have some amazing netballers. Shani Layton, Norda, you know, you've got Ash Brazel there at the moment, you know, big names, people that, you know, are exceptional athletes. And I just, yeah, for me, it just doesn't smell right. It really feels like the Collingwood club itself is saying, we've given it 6 years, that's enough. We've ticked a diversity box that we needed to tick.
Mm.
We're now actually, I'm putting, maybe, you know, casting aspersions here on Collingwood, but it's almost like now that they've actually got an AFLW team, oh, it's maybe we don't need the netball anymore. Maybe we don't need to tick that diversity box because we've actually got the AFLW girls that we look after.
Mm.
I just think that, yeah, for me, it just stinks that Collingwood have saying, oh, we're not making money, so we're out.
Seems like a very
short-sighted.
Very short-sighted decision.
Yeah, 6 years. I mean, what club makes money after 6 years?
None.
None. Thank you. You've heard it here. Facts from Chloe. Netball Australia CEO Kelly Ryan fronted me last week and said that even if Collingwood was unable to participate next season, there would still be 8 teams competing for the trophy as per the current broadcast agreement. So they're locked into that. On Sunday night, the Magpies played a Swifts team that were looking for their 6th straight win. They're on a roll, the Swifts. Go the Swifts. And it wasn't pretty.
Excuse me. Go the Giants. No. Wrong Sydney team.
Anyway, the Magpies were whacked by the Swifts 85-56, and after the match, head coach Nicole Richardson spoke for the first time about the turmoil her club finds itself in. She told Fox Netball, "It's not due to performance or results or anything like that. The club is looking at whether the program moving forward is financially viable for the Collingwood Football Club. It's completely out of our hands. It's really quite an emotional time. We're not using that as an excuse for our game against the Swifts." Really tough for those players to have been told on Tuesday that you might not have a job in 4 weeks. I think the season's got 5 weeks to run before finals.
And I don't imagine running out onto the court, you'd feel this burning desire to play for your club.
No. The reality is that teams need to be successful to attract fans. Like, there's no doubt about that, and commercial partners, especially in what is becoming a more and more crowded sporting landscape. And despite having a star-studded team over the years, like we spoke about, Collingwood have kind of failed in that space.
Mm.
Mind you, like you said, three finals appearances in 6 years. It's not terrible. Anyway, one group that has taken the news well, again, silver linings everywhere, is Netball Tasmania, who've lodged submissions to be part of Super Netball previously. CEO Mitch Colson said, "It's been a bit of a whirlwind and it's hard not to let your mind get carried away in terms of what could be, but if things eventuate or unfold as they might, then just the potential of this opportunity, it's pretty hard not to be excited about it." Tassie's turning into a sporting superpower.
It's all happening down in Tassie, isn't it?
Isn't it? The timing of the Collingwood review could not be worse, given that no players from any Super Netball team are contracted beyond the end of this season, as there's no collective players agreement from Netball Australia beyond September 2023.
Theirs is a little bit similar to AFLW in terms of these really short-term deals.
Just year to year. Bad luck if you've got a mortgage.
Bad luck. Don't get me started on that.
The uncertainty of the team's participation moving forward could delay any new CPA, because if there is a new team, has to be involved in discussions. Mm-hmm. It's just an absolute nightmare, and leave players without contracts and without an income. Netball Australia has confirmed they are working with Collingwood through the process and is committed to an 18 Suncorp Super Netball competition in 2024.
We thought interesting to look at some of the Ausplay numbers that came out just recently, 28th of April 2023, by the Australian Sports Commission. So netball is played by over 620,000 adults across the country. It's third on the list when it comes to team sports, sitting behind only soccer at 1.16 million and basketball at 830,000. AFL is fourth on the team sport list at 560,000 adult participants. It just, the people are there playing the game. They want the sport.
It's so, like, the numbers are there, like you said. It's just, it comes again down to that investment. You know, like it is something where there's already the base of the pyramid is there, and it's kind of a bit weird because it is, the diamonds are obviously top of the pyramid and getting the investment, but you've got to, all levels of the pyramid are important. And I just think that, you know, as I said, Collingwood need to be better here and just stand up and say, yeah, we're taking a hit, but we believe in the sport and we believe in this team and we're going to spend the money that we've got.
And it's also interesting thinking about the Victorian government investment into netball, the fact that the Commonwealth Games is going to be played there, the Diamonds are so successful a lot of the time in the Commonwealth Games. Like, it doesn't really line up. Obviously, there's the Melbourne Vixens to compete with, but you kind of want to be in Victoria for this period of over the next few years in particular.
Yeah, I had a look further into those Ausplay numbers, and Victoria has the largest number of netballers in it.
Strange behaviour.
Really strange. Be better, Magpies. Come on, get in. Like, have a dig. Long term. You spent 130 years playing AFL with men. Give it more than 6 years.
Let's take a look at what to watch.
The Australian Open Diving Championships are being held in Perth this week. The championships serve as the selection event for the World Aquatics Championships in Fukuoka. That's a lot of championships. Later this year, and will feature Australia's best divers. The five-day event is open to the public from May 24th to May 28th. If you aren't in Perth, you can live stream on diving.org.au.
The World Surf League heads to the Surf Ranch in California this week, with the event kicking off on Saturday, May 27th. This is a unique event held in a state-of-the-art wave pool, so no waiting around for Mother Nature to deliver a swell. Make sure you tune into this one. It'll be live on Foxtel and the 7 Network.
It's pretty cool, though. The Wave Ranch.
That's Kelly Slater's one, right?
Yep.
So cool.
In tennis, the French Open starts on the weekend. Tennis, back.
Well, how good.
The majors are back. And how do you feel about the clay season, Chloe?
I don't have a lot to contribute about the specifics of the clay season. All I know is Rafa.
Oh, sad. Did you hear news? I mean, he's pulled out of this year's French Open and said he's only got 12 months left in him.
Yeah, really sad.
The farewell tour. The world's best will be looking to secure the second major of the season, and it starts on the weekend. You can watch it all on Stan Sport and the 9 Network.
And that's the wrap.
That is it, wrapped. See you next week, friend.
See you next week. Bye.